Okay, fine. So this year is about cruel mercy. And okay, and it's thanks to Gil. He had the question about how we can, you know, the slaughtering of Amalek and killing the babies and the women and everybody, the children, all that stuff. And just you were saying, you know, I think your question was something along the lines of, we don't do that kind of stuff. It sounds
like, we're above that.
We're above that.
It sounds
stuff.
Like jihad.
Right, it sounds like jihad. We don't do that kind of stuff. But we do. So the question is, how do we explain it? Yeah, you got ready questions. I love it. Okay.
Taking up later, taking time, whatever. But is there really a difference objectively between killing killing a baby and an adult male? Like, morally, like...
I mean, you would... I tell you what, I think the argument...
Really?
The argument, I mean, they're so innocent.
Yeah.
It's not... Yeah. It's no, they're...
Don't think of now.
They're neutral, they're nothing. An adult is already...
Well,
that
the adult, you say
sin. Been good or been bad.
Yeah,
like,
they
is
sinned.
Is killing an innocent person and a guilty person?
Yeah, how could a baby be guilty? A baby's... What would the baby do?
It's a blank slate.
Blank slate.
It's a blank. It's a nothing. That's it's not thing. Neutral. It's neutral. It's not bad.
It'd be like there was more.
You're not buying it. Wow, you're really ruthless. I like it.
What?
He doesn't even have a problem. Let me hear the question. That's what I'm talking about.
No, I don't feel that.
Right. Wait, don't we say all life is equal? So why should it be different?
Why should? Oh, what do you mean? Oh, but no, but
this isn't the question,
baby's
though,
innocent.
It?
The baby's innocent. The baby.
Okay, so what?
It's not
every life. Okay, most people hear the question. Okay,
every life should be the same, right?
I don't know if that'd be the tough one to get the question across. I think the answer is the difficult one.
I'll tell you here, like,
why you should have a problem with killing innocent babies. That would be next week's show.
I didn't say it was good to kill.
Might be very quiet.
Wait a
here.
Second.
But no, you're not encouraging it. You're not encouraging it.
What's the difference between killing a baby and killing an actual man?
Oh, an innocent adult, like an innocent adult.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. It's no real difference. Oh, well, there is a difference. It's a baby. There's a difference.
That's
emotionally, there's definitely
so
a difference.
Basically, you're saying that the only difference is the perception of other people.
No, but certainly emotionally, I think most people would have a harder time killing like a little baby than an old person.
I agree. That's nice.
But philosophically and legally,
no
difference.
Wait, so where did all those
philosophically
look like? What did the baby look like?
Legally,
all right,
no difference.
Come on, man.
Philosophically, that's a hard question.
I think it's the same as like innocent guilty.
We'll read the psukim by Amalek, okay, and then you guys will say why it's all good, okay? Right, here's the further psukim. Okay, this is what Shmuel tells the Shal. Okay, Leich v'ikisa es Amalek, v'charamtim es kol asher lo, lay it all to waste. V'lo sachmol olav, do not have pity on him. V'heimata me'ish v'ad isha, man, woman, me'olav v'ad yonik. Toddler, nursing baby, mishor v'atzeh, migamal v'achmor, animals too. Okay, fine. So Shaul goes ahead. He points an army. V'yachshol samalik. He hits them. He basically fulfills most of the commandment. But v'yitbos es agag melech amalik chai. So he kills the entire, all the people, but he just takes Agag, right, the king. And for some reason, it's not clear what the cause of it was, but Shaul and Bnei Israel, they have pity, right, on the king, on Agag, and the Meitav Hatzon V'Abakar, they didn't want to just totally destroy the animals, right? They want to be makarim as karbanos. It seems like a noble idea. And they left the animals alive, the good animals, you know, not the bad ones. Bad animals they killed, no good, no, we don't need those. The good animals for karbanos, and basically the king. Okay, and then, you know, then Shmuel gets a nevuah in the night that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says him, Nichamti ki machti es Shaul HaMelech. Right, God regrets it, and he's, you know, ultimately Shaul loses the melucha and loses everything, right? And Shmuel goes to him, he approaches him, he gives him rebuke, and then ultimately at the end, this is all from Haftorah Parsha Zachar, right? Vayomer Shmuel Hagish Elias Agag, Melech Amalek. So then Shmuel says, after he rebukes Shaul, he says, bring me Agag the king. Vayelech Elav Agag Me'adanos, Vayomer Agag Achayin Samar Hamavis. Vayomer Shmuel Kasher Shikol Nashim Charbecha, King Tishakel Me'nashim Yimecha, Shmuel as Agag Kne Hashem Bagilgal. And Shmuel says, just like you bereaved cause women through your sword, through your destruction, you cause women to be bereaved. So you too, your mother should also be from you. And he hews him, right? Which we said, Rashi says it means he cuts him into four pieces. And the Medrash says he cuts him up into, I love this one, kazaya-sized pieces, and he feeds him to the birds. Okay? Gruesome stuff. So obviously the question, which everybody here is fine with, but okay, fine, just how you... Yeah, it took some time, but whatever, he had time. Okay, so then the question is, obviously, is what the women and children, the babies, and that's one question, fun. I know you guys are cool with that, but... Okay? and also is just, we had this question last week, but what exactly was so bad about the sin... about Shaul, and also what exactly was his sin? What was so bad about it? And ultimately, didn't they really rectify it by Shmuel killing Agag? Was the next day? So like, what's really the big deal for one day? You know, and I know there's a medrash that night he impregnated the women or something.
Yeah,
okay, fine, but you know, it's hard for me to believe that's literal. It's a literal medrash because he was in chains. They don't exactly let the get conjugal visits the first night after prisoner of war. It's hard for me to believe that that's a literal medrash. You know what I mean? He was in chains. They bring him in chains. So what really was the sin and how was that fixed?
Shaul
committed the sin. Shmuel was the Navi who ultimately was the one who chopped Agag into pieces. But Shmuel was the Navi.
And why did he have to chop him into pieces?
Just kill him, yeah. There's no commandment to chop him into pieces. It didn't seem initially... Coming to four, whatever you want to say. Initially, Shaul wasn't commanded to do that, so why does Shmuel decide to go ahead and do that? Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I just had a question. What does it mean that they showed mercy on him? Like, does that mean they just kept him alive or whatever, or does it mean something else also in addition to capturing him alive?
It would seem simple shot is that they didn't kill him. They had pity on him, they didn't kill him, like they were supposed to. But they showed him compassion and they didn't kill him, spared his life. Mm-hmm. It would seem so. Okay, so that's the, Now, for the Chumash, there's a very similar, in terms of this, concepts with Parsha in the Torah, by Ir HaNidachas. Okay, similar kind of phenomenon. And I saw today that the Sforno actually links up what you do to Ir HaNidachas. He says it's the same thing as wiping out the memory of a Malek. Okay, so it's... So actually, this Sforno links it up. I'm not just making it up. Okay, so it's in Parshas or A. So it's Perek Yud Gimel. Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, so the Pasuk is like this. Kisishma ba'achas arecha asher Hashem Elokecha nosim lecha l'shev Hashem le'emor. So you hear one of your cities in Eretz Yisrael. Yatzu nashim nei blial mikirbecha. Two people go out. V'yadichas yoshva iram lemor neilcha v'navda lohim acherim asher lo yedatem. Okay, so two people, at least two people, can't just be one. It's an interesting thing, but you can. As they convince, they start an avodah zarah movement, a new religious movement starts up in one in a city in Eretz Yisrael. V'derashu chagav v'shalta heitiv. Okay, fine. You investigate and you find out that that's actually what happened. So wipe them out through a sword. Even though Avodah Zarah is normally done through skila in this situation, when you have rove of the ear, when the rove of the ear worships it, it's their punishment gets converted from skila into cherev, sword. Hachayim osam is kosher bav as behemta lefi charev. You kill the animals, everything. Okay, good. The esh kolshlal tikvot al tocher chova, all the possessions. V'sraftu ish esayir v'skolshlal kolal Hashem lekecha. Kolal is actually an interesting choice. That's like the word the Torah uses for an ola. It's kolal, but okay, we'll get. I think someone should try to make that connection. But you burn everything in the middle of the in the city street. V'isatel olam losi bane'od. You can't rebuild the city again. Okay, and it's a machlokas, but basically I think everybody holds the wives of the worshippers get killed. It's a machlokas about the children. Okay, the Rambam actually paskins that you do kill the children of the worshippers, the babies also. But it is a machlokas. And the people who did not worship, you don't kill the people who don't worship. But you do kill the families. Let's say the Rambam. Let's just take the hardest position. Is that you do kill the families of all the worshippers, right? Even if they the babies, right? They didn't worship anything, but you kill them. Okay, and you burn everything. Even the tzaddikim, even the people who didn't worship, their possessions are destroyed. Lo yidbak biyadcha me'uma min acherim leman. So okay, you're not allowed to keep any of these possessions. Leman yashu Hashem echaron apo, so that God will return from His anger. And He'll give you mercy, compassion. And He'll have mercy on you, and He'll increase you. When you listen to God's His voice, by doing that which is proper in the eyes of God. So again, we have a similar phenomenon of where you're killing right, children, innocent children. At face value here, right? That you just and also the wives, right? So again, the question is how can the Torah? This isn't us. How do we do these things? So okay. So before we give the answer, I just want to. I think the most important thing, just in terms of the questions, is to formulate the questions. Okay, is that I think there's two questions that are very important to separate out here. One is a question of justice. Okay, how is this just? Kol derech of mishpat, we say all the ways of God are just. So you can ask a question of, is this really just? What did the baby do, right, to deserve to be killed? And it's a question of, it's not justice, mishpat. Okay, question of mishpat. Okay, that's one framework. And I think you have to try to answer, I'm just going to try to give approaches here, you know, because this area has been worked over by Rishonim. You go to the Rambam's, try to answer it, Ramban. This is not like a new problem, and Rishonim have discussed this. I'll just give you an approach. You know, it's based on Rishonim. The Rambam talks about it, but it's an approach. It's not going to work out everything. But the first, I think, the most important thing is to split up the questions. First one is a question of Mishpat. Okay? The second question, after you get past the justice of the situation, is what about Rachamim? Is that we were not, even if, like, Mishpat, it is just, but ultimately the Torah seems to be advocating, in general, advocates a path of Rachamim, of mercy and compassion. And that seems to be the Derech HaTorah in general. So this seems to be like Achzarias, seems to be cruelty, right? You're killing innocent babies. And it just doesn't seem to be the way that a Ben Torah, a Jew, that we generally advocate how we should act. So why are we acting in such a cruel way? Okay, but those are two very different questions. One is in terms of justice. And the other is in terms of why are we acting in such a cruel way of Achzarias? Why don't we show compassion and humanity and right, a mercy to these people. Okay? That doesn't work, right? Got it. We just read it was about Ir Nidachas. That's about a city in Eretz Yisrael which worships Avodah Zarah, and like an Avodah Zarah movement starts. You have two people, and Rova the year has to start worshiping the Avodah Zarah. If only a minority of people in the city worship Avodah Zarah, then each one gets judged as an individual, and they get stoned. That's a punishment for Avodah Zarah. But if most of the year, if the majority of people in the city end up worshiping Avodah Zarah, and they
meaning 51%?
51%, right, correct. And there's leaders. There's a lot of requirements to become an Ir Nidachas. And the Gemara, I think, says that there never really was. There's one of these halachos and stories, like halach parashas in the Torah, that never actually came to be. It's machlokes in the Gemara whether there actually ever was an Ir Nidachas. Very strict requirements and what to make it. But ultimately it means the parsha of the Torah has to be explained anyway. And that's it was given to understand, to learn about it. But yeah, it's about an Avodah Zarah movement, a new religious movement to worship Avodah Zarah that's taken over a city. Okay, and in that case you kill basically the worshippers to Avodah Zarah and their families. And you burn all the possessions, you burn down the city, totally destroy it, you can never rebuild it. Okay. The people who didn't worship Avodah Zarah, so they don't get killed. They're the tzaddikim in the city, and they don't get killed, but their possessions are destroyed. Okay. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Why isn't even a question to have rachamim on Ovdei Avodah Zarah?
Well, with the babies. You're killing the babies.
Okay. It's always but that's... That's, I mean, all right, I don't want to get involved in that one again.
No, but you think that killing baby, that's like a cruel thing.
Right, but that's a child that's just going to be an Ovid Avodah Zarah.
retinosis arrow.
If his parents are gone.
All right, but that's one instance. How many instances are there the other way?
It's good. I like it. It's a good approach. We're going that direction. But not necessarily, you're right. Definitely not necessarily.
If a parent is...
I thought you were the one who wanted to kill everybody.
No, I'm saying here.
Still.
Nowadays, if somebody's parents are, Republican, are you going to see the kid's going to be a Republican automatically?
No, I wouldn't kill them for that.
No, I'm saying in general, like...
Yeah. That's
no, I'm saying like or whatever it is. You think the person's viewpoint, like the parents' viewpoints, are not automatically
no, definitely not
transferred.
Depending upon the age of the child, though.
No, but still, I would think. I mean, like, it's good. We're going to talk about this later on. Okay, we'll talk about this later on. Okay, let me first try to approach the mishpat. How you answer the mishpat? Okay. So I think basically the only real approach you can give, in my mind, okay. Is that the Torah believes in idea of collective responsibility, okay, and collective justice as a group. So, for example, we say on like Rosh Hashanah that the world is judged, right? And if Rov of the world is chayiv, then al pi mishpat, right? Based upon justice, the world, let's say, deserves to be destroyed, right? It doesn't actually happen because there is mercy and there's rachamim, but just in analyzing the framework of justice. If the world is all, the world is judged as one entity, and it could be chayv to be destroyed if it was wicked as a whole. Okay, and the same thing, you say every city, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, I think it's Parak Gimel. Every city is judged on Rosh Hashanah is whether it's going to be, and if there's a weighing of tzaddik and rasha, right, righteous or wicked, and also every individual. But there's an idea of applying mishpat to a social unit, and I think the reason for it, the rationale for it, is that certain sins are individual sins, but certain sins are societal sins. Okay, that don't even exist in like that don't exist on like a particular individual. For example, if you have let's say a breakdown of like social norms, right, sort of morals. In a society, right, and certain values like social values. So these aren't like those aren't a particular individual, but like a society as a whole has values. Society as a whole, might let's say go to war, an unjust war, right, or start persecuting another nation, something like that, right, like the Egyptians did to the Jews, right. So you don't say over there that it's like one person's power. No, but the whole. All the one person can't do something like that. One person can't persecute a nation, but the whole group has to go along with it. So certain sins are by the very nature, they're group sins, and there's such a thing as controversy. There's group merits, right? But the society as a whole has certain characteristics about it that are good and bad, and it doesn't make sense in those situations when you're applying justice to a group and you're valuing the group in the framework of the group. So then the punishment is directed towards the group. You have to evaluate, is this group worthy of existing, or is it deserved to be, does it deserve to exist, does it deserve not to, to exist, in the framework of Mishpat. So if it comes out, the scales come out, that the group doesn't deserve to exist, let's say the Dor HaMabul. Right? The Dor HaMabul was a case we have of where the world was judged, and the world came out, God basically had decided to destroy the world, al pi Mishpat, and that society could no longer produce a healthy individual could no longer produce, that's God's justice. It didn't deserve to exist, and it was right, and it was drowned. But and basically everybody in that society, even if you had certain individuals who were worse than others, certain individuals who weren't as bad, right? It wasn't every person in that society, except for Noah, we'll get to in a second, died, and it wasn't each individual was judged, but the society as a whole was judged. And every person came along with that, and they're all killed because the world as a whole was deemed to be destroyed. Now, if you have an individual who really separates himself from the group in a qualitative matter, like Noah did, so then he can be removed. You can't really judge him as part of the world. He's a totally different person. He's not really part of that society. Right? That's why Noah is saved. And there's a Ramban on this: is once Noah is saved, then his kids and his wife, his whole family, comes along with Noah. Right, they were only saved because of Noach's chas. I forget which pasuk he's dorish, but it's Without Noach, his family really wasn't that perfected. They were really part of the society as a whole. They're kind of like in between. They didn't deserve to be destroyed individually, but they were part of society, and they would have been destroyed along with the rest of the world. But once already, Noach was separated out to be saved, so then his family comes with him, right? And he sets up like a separate group to be saved. Okay, but there is an idea, the Torah believes in this idea of justice. Not just, you don't take a look at every single individual and say, does this individual deserve to exist or not? Is a person exists in the context of society? And if the society doesn't deserve to exist, then the mishpat includes everybody.
That
what?
Why is that fair? Regarding Yeridachas, that's what we're talking about, right?
So fine, so let's apply it to Yeridachas. So if the mishpat comes in, you investigate the situation, and you're judging the city as an entity. Okay, you're not judging it as an individual, but as an entity of a city. Does the city deserve to be destroyed? So then it comes out that, yeah, the city does deserve to be destroyed for what it did. So then that's it. Then the whole city gets destroyed. And that's really mishpat. And everybody really gets included in that.
Even if they're innocent?
They're part of the city. They're part of the city. You're not judging the individual as an individual. You're judging the city. And they're part of the city that deserve to be destroyed. And that's the justice.
But what should they have done?
Like a choice.
They have rebelled or something?
Well, so you have a choice whether to kill them or not. Meaning, I understand that it's like there's no way to know, there's no choice, and you deem the city as, but here there's a baby.
Right.
Not vote there, vote there.
You don't have to kill the baby, correct. You don't have to. Well, you can have rachamim on the baby, right? Some people, like Rabbi Akiva holds, I think you do. You have rachamim on the baby. But in terms of, you see, that's already rachamim. Okay, and then there's a place for rachamim, but right now we're just talking about mishpat. In mishpat, the baby's part of the city. The baby's part of the family of the Oed with the Zara and part of the city, and the city is going to be destroyed. And this baby's not a separate part; it's part of the city. This society doesn't deserve to exist. So the mishpat is on the city. You go ahead.
So I just want to know, so you said by Noach he wasn't destroyed because he wasn't part of the society?
He separated himself out in qualitative matter. Ish Tam and Sadiq Hayyabadorosov. He was a qualitatively different Sadiq. He separated himself off from the rest of society, and therefore he was saved. But his family did not. And were it not for Noach, his family would have been killed with the rest of his generation. But because Noach was separated off and God was going to save Noach, then his family could become under, it's almost like an umbrella. It came under his ashkach, under his umbrella. You know, there's these two groups. There's the rest of the world and there's Noach. And now you could say, well, his family comes with him. They're not that bad, they can kind of be saved. You understand? But like, were it not for Noach, they didn't deserve to be saved on their own. They were part of the society and the mishpat really should have been on them. They were only saved because of his chus.
So you're saying again, so there's this idea of a communal responsibility.
Yeah, communal responsibility.
And it extends insofar within a society.
Right.
Noah was saved because he wasn't part of that.
He really, right. He separated himself out in a qualitative way.
It's going to be tough to, I mean, so what do you say about the baby?
Well, the baby hasn't separated itself off.
Yeah, but it's not really, you can't really say it's part of the society.
Sure, why not? What's a part of?
The baby is part of society, but...
But
you have a choice.
You definitely.
Okay, I understand. The mercy. I understand. That's the next question. Let's have a little mercy here. Why we got to smash?
But mishpat's like an objective.
I hear that.
System.
I hear that.
No.
But you definitely say the baby is a part of society, but it's not the baby's choice. The baby depends on the society for its existence.
Yeah.
Because it can't exist by itself.
Right.
Whereas a regular person can exist by themselves, separate from the society.
Okay, but all the more so that the baby should be included in the society. It decides in order to exist, and the baby comes with it. But he doesn't exist outside of society. You had a question? No. Not yet. Yeah.
Does it work the other way also, are we saying? In terms of, like, if there was somebody that was, I guess, anomaly in a society that was all good, that would also go the same way?
You mean for the good, that would benefit a person? Yeah, I think so. A person lives in a city, you know, in a place, in a country, and that country is overall a good country, so then he benefits from the... when that country prospers. And that country, you know, if you're in a country that's good and God gives rain to Eretz Yisrael because overall it's tzaddikim, so the Rasha who lives in that city, in that country, is going to benefit from the rain. God doesn't make it that it doesn't rain on that Rasha's house because overall it's for the country as a whole and there's rain for the country. You know, so yeah, it works both ways. It definitely works both ways. When you're judging, you got to look at what you're judging. Are you judging an individual? Are you judging a city? Are you judging the world? And like when you're judging a communal crime, It doesn't make sense to start now applying the Mishpat at an individual level. It's not the entity, because the entity of the judgment is the city. It's not the individual.
Why does it make sense to do that? Why not just go by
the
individual?
Yeah, that seems so against the Torah.
Everything else does it? No, it doesn't. That's what I'm saying. No, it doesn't. Because you want to have, you see that I'm saying, you have to be careful. You're asking, are you saying, Wani, look, you could execute it differently and have a little mercy here. Why you kill the baby? He's innocent. Or are you saying in terms of justice?
Justice, why do you kill by an individual? Yeah, baby, yeah.
Because you're not judging, it's not a sin of an individual. You're not, you never, the individual was never being
judged. It's a 51% majority of a place.
You're judging.
So go to each of those people. And
but you're not, the crime, the individual is not the one who sinned. It wasn't a sin of the individual, it was a sin of the city.
It's called Ir Hanidachas, because it's a city.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, let's say the Egyptians, when they oppressed the Jews and they really, they brought all the, they start throwing the Jewish babies into the river, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not an individual crime. That was a society. They had laws set up, right? Or Nazi Germany. You can't believe it. It's not just Hitler. But you have the whole country went along with the thing. And one person can't do something like that. The nature of these Kristallnacht, of these laws, when you have like laws against the Jews. So that's not something that can be done. It's not something that even exists. It even makes sense for one individual. An individual doesn't make laws. A society makes laws. So the very nature of the sin was a communal a sin. And you're judging, is this society a good society? You have to look at the features of the society as a whole. And if the society doesn't deserve to exist, then look, I mean, all its members don't deserve to exist. They're all being judged in one framework. And that's on Rosh Hashanah, why you have these different levels. You have these hierarchy of you don't just say each individual is judged, but you say the whole world is judged. If you, yeah, go ahead.
Just a small point. Another example is, I think, would also be Lot.
Yeah, where he was saved by Avram, you mean?
No. Oh, from Sodom. Yeah, correct. Because the judgment was against the society of Sodom. I mean,
right.
He wasn't really, truly, ideologically, completely a citizen of Sodom.
Right.
In that regard.
Right.
So he was saved, and his family...
But you see, well, he was saved, because it says, Bechemas Hashem Alav. It was because of Rachman he was saved. And it was really B'schus Avraham, and it was a combination of B'schus Lot and B'schus Avraham. There's actually steer in the Rashi's there. But it really was Rachman to save him. But if you look at Avraham's tefillos, if you notice his tefillos are always, if there's 10 people in each city, if there's 9 people in Mitzrayim God with one of them, and you have 10 in just in one city, Avraham's always looking to create a tzibur of tzaddikim. Avraham doesn't ask if there's 3 tzaddikim, will you say no? Because Avraham understands you're judging the city, and you're going to be destroying these 5 cities as cities. So what Avram is trying to do is say, well, he's trying to understand God's judgment, Mishpat. Stone is a perfect example of this. It's really a Mishpat on a city. He says, let's say there's 10 people. Now I have a Tzibor of Tzadikim and Tzibor of Rishayim. Will you destroy the entire city if you have a Tzibor of Tzadikim? And God says, no, he wouldn't, because then there's 2 Tzibors, and he'll separate the Tzibor of Tzadikim, they would be saved. Okay? But you see, Avram's asking, he needs 10 people. He wants a Tzibor. If he just had one, he doesn't even ask if there's one. He stops asking at a certain point. Okay, so the same stone is the same exact situation. The Dor Mabul, you have stone, you see the Torah employs this idea of Mishpat. There's a Mishpat on a there's a collective responsibility. It's Tzibor, the responsibility of the Tzibor in terms of its sins, in terms of its punishments.
Yeah. Does there exist a concept of individual Mishpat? Or that just
yeah, definitely, there's both. No, both. On Rosh Hashanah, each individual is also judged.
Right.
And most of the Beis Din, in general, Beis Din judge is an individual. An individual works with Lodazara, he gets skila, right? But when a city, it's rare. In general, you don't judge cities, you know. But this is a unique portion of the Torah where Beis Din judges cities.
Right.
But yeah, most of the time, I mean, it's individual justice.
Right.
So, in what way was Noach not part of the society?
I mean, you have to, say Ishtamin Tzadik HaYabadarosov. I guess he even wasn't involved in Gezel and Arias and,
I think we have to extend it beyond just involvement, because otherwise we're going to have a problem with babies because they're not really involved, you know?
Right, no, I don't mean, right, I understand. I'm saying that his perfection was such that he took himself out. He really separated himself from it. But a baby's part of the society. The baby grows up to be part of that society. That's who the future of that society is. Babies are part of society. No, I'm just saying de facto a baby is born into a society. Right. You're just born in that. So you're part of a baby doesn't exist. I forgot what I said. You know, a baby doesn't exist in outer space. I'm saying as babies exist in societies. Human beings are all born into a city, into a country. And unless the individual really separates himself off from his, if he's living in a person's living in an evil place, then he's really responsible to leave. He's responsible to leave that place. And if he doesn't, then he suffers with the consequences of living in a place that's evil. And
everyone has bechira. They could theoretically, like Avraham did, you could break away from your parents.
Yeah, right. I mean, the baby at
I'm saying at a certain point, you theoretically
at a certain point
could.
You do, and you're responsible to. Right. I mean, you're responsible to. It's not easy, especially like the wives of the worshippers. It's not an easy thing. But if ultimately, if you see the whole city starting to worship Avodah Zarah, so you have to leave. You know.
And then what? You and like another person who was part of the city go report to Beis Din.
I mean, eventually that's what happens. Somebody says something to Beis Din, and they investigate. And no, I'm sure it's not easy, but, you know, it's better than the alternative. Okay. Okay, fine. Now, look, I'm really giving you what I think is the approach to this, to these problems, but, you know, maybe there's more, you know, different answers, and it's something to think about and to try to develop and see if it makes sense to you. But I think this is like the general approach. It seems to be consistent with like other things we know about the Torah. I just want to mention one thing before we move on to the next question, the mercy question, is I think why you use a sword, right? When it's individual, you kill each person by stoning him. But I think a sword is because a sword is milchama, right? When you fight a war, you use a sword. Right, so general, this sword is—it's very rare they have a misa of cheret. So I think it's converted into basically it's a war. It's mochemas Hashem against the city, because the city is considered to be like rebelling. It's turned on the rest of Klal Yisrael, separated itself out. They worship a different religion. You have to recognize they're really a separate entity, and now it's basically a war between you and them. Again, that's why you use a sword against them. So you kill them with a sword. It's very rare that you have a sword. But always, whenever you have Muhammad, the king always has, it was just killed with the sword, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay, to try to answer the next question of still you can have a little mercy here, right? A little mercy. Maybe in terms of justice, you know, like, look, the truth is, the whole world, if ever the whole world in Rosh Hashanah is Chayiv Misa, then the whole world's going to be destroyed, right? The Ram says that. Miyad, right away, or a city, right away. Even individuals, right away, a person starts to be destroyed. But the Ravid's question, I mean, you see, it's not true. The world, I mean, unless you can say the world has never really rove wicked, ever. It's never been that way. But, I mean, the answer is, I think, ultimately, Ram is speaking in the framework of abstract of Mishpat. He's really just speaking about Mishpat. And he's ignoring another side of the equation, which is Rachamim, is mercy. Is that even though the world might be chayiv, you know, chayiv destruction, but there's Rachamim, and there's mercy, and God, in general, doesn't just always do exact mishpat to somebody, but usually we employ mercy. And the question of why don't we? What's changed here? Why all of a sudden by Ir Nidachas and by Amalek are we not like have a little mercy on the baby? Like, you can make arguments. Save the baby. Didn't really do anything. Yeah, maybe in mishpat it's one din against the nation. It's one din against. It's one judgment against the city. But still, like, you don't have to kill every single person. You can say. Right, it's like as your question, Rob. You don't have to do it. Like, it's one thing if practically either you drop a bomb on them or you don't. So then you can understand it. But like, you're going in here, you're rounding them up, and you're going to kill them with a sword. So you don't have to kill a baby with a sword, right? You simply not do it. So why not use a little compassion? Okay. So I'm going to try to answer that with these. There's Rambam's by Emesis. Okay. It's actually a parsha right before Nidachas is by Emesis. But I'm not really going to read through the Pesukim. I'm going to read through the halachos in the Rambam. It's in Hilchos Sanhedrin. It's about the din of emesis, how you judge him. It's Perek Yud Aleph. Okay, so there's a little bit of background you need to know about how Sanhedrin, by capital crimes, right? How the courts by cases of death penalty, the setup. Okay, so there's a difference between dine mamonos and dine nefashos, monetary judgments, monetary courts, and capital crimes courts. Okay, and basically. Okay, well, I'll give you a few of the differences. It's ma bein dine mamonos and dine nefashos. Okay, so dine mamonos poskim bein l'schus bein l'chova, dine nefashos poskim l'schus. Right, bein poskim l'chova. Like, you start off, your initial thing, your initial statements of the judges have to be something for the schus of the person being judged. right? You could say maybe you go to either machlokes nigmar what it is. Either you go to the, you say maybe these edim, maybe these edim are liars, maybe they're contradicting each other, or you say, is there anybody here who can think of a schus for the guy? But you have to start off with schus. You can't start off with a statement that implies the guy is guilty. Dine mamunis matan api echad bein schus bein chova. Dine mamunis, if you have two say, you know, chayiv, one says he's potter, so then that's it. You go by the rov, two things chayiv. Dine nefashas matan api echad schus veapi shnayim chova. But if you have 12 people who say he's, 12 people say he's innocent, 11 say he's guilty, so then the person's innocent because 12 rove of them said he's innocent. But if 12 people say he's guilty and 11 say he's innocent, then he's not guilty. Okay, you have to keep adding dayanim until you can come to a majority that's at least two people. Okay, and I won't get into this far, but you see, like, there's a certain favoritism and there's a towards getting the guy off. Okay, to if you posken that he's innocent, right? You say that he's innocent and he's going out of base and somebody says, hey, I just thought of an argument why he's really guilty. That's it. He's innocent. You don't return him. But if you posken that he's guilty, his chayiv misa is getting taken out to be killed, then somebody says, hey, I can think of a reason he's innocent, then you'll take him back into the court and judge him to be innocent. Okay? And ultimately it comes down to, there's like this, and there's, you know, also gives you this, of basically, there's these two elements. Okay, there's mishpat. You have to do justice. Uviata ramikir becha. You have to. If the guy's really guilty and he deserves to be killed, there is a system of mishpat. There is a system of justice that you have to employ. But there's also this idea of itzilu heida, is that you're trying to save the guy. Okay, you can't, within the confines of mishpat, within the confines of the law of what can legally be done. You can't just violate, say, we're not going to kill a guy who's really guilty, but within the confines of the law, you're trying to save the guy. You're not trying to kill the guy. It's Mechal Shabbos, doesn't matter, you don't want to kill him. You're trying to do everything you can possibly to save the guy. Okay, so you have this framework of Mishpat, which forms a base that you can't really violate, but in the confines of that system, you have Rachamim. You're trying to save his life. Okay, now Nalacha Hederam says like this. A mesis is somebody who privately goes to another individual and tries to convince him to worship Avodah Zarah. Okay? He secretly goes to the guy and says, hey, you know, you should go worship this Avodah Zarah. You know, let's go do that. Bad dude, a really bad dude. The Torah does not like him. Okay?
Bad guy.
Okay, yeah, bad guy. Hamesis ain dinov kishar din nefashos. So it's a unique exception. He's the only one who's totally different. Okay, mechamnin lo eid ha'edim. So you set up edim for him. Nobody else you do this, but let's say a guy comes up to me and he tries to convince you to worship with the Zara. So I do what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to say, okay, you know, hold on a second. Like, let me think about that. Get back to me. I say, you know, I get two witnesses. I put them, you know, behind the bush. Then I get him to come back and say, hey, just repeat back to me what you said before. He tries it again. I go, boom, two edim, done. Okay?
Sounds like you've done this before.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, you don't have to warn him. Okay, you set him up, you plant the edim, you don't give him any warning in advance of what you're doing, he never gets warned, doesn't matter, you kill him without ever warning him, without ever him even knowing that there's edim watching him, okay, and you plant the edim. He goes out innocent. Somehow he got out. You'll see it's not so easy. He goes out innocent. And somebody says, hey, I have a reason why he should really be guilty. That was a bad svara we gave. He should really be guilty. Bring him back. We're going to start the court case again. We'll start the case again as many times as we need to get him guilty. Kill him. But he goes out to be killed. Right? He's guilty. Hold on. I got svara. He's really innocent. Hold on. Okay. No, ein machzir no, so you don't bring him back. We had a kid. Paskin, he's guilty. Yisvaras, your time to give your svaras was earlier.
Until proven innocent.
Yeah, guilty until proven innocent. Something like that. If it ain't torn in the mesis, you don't make up tainus for him. If he hasn't, can't come up with them on his own. Umoshiva, here's a critical one. Okay? Umoshivan bedino sris, a eunuch. Okay? Somebody's castrated, a sris. Vizakain and an old somebody who's old, umishain lobanim, right? Normally these people are apostle. These people cannot sit on the capital court. Somebody doesn't have children, somebody's very old, Rash is because he's so far past the age of child rearing because they don't have rachamim, right? A certain person if they don't have compassion. So normally if it's the way that you want to save the guy, you're not allowed to put a person who's not going to have mercy and compassion on the Beis Din. But over here at Dafka, we select out the people who are not going to have any compassion. Somebody's got no kids. Somebody's really zucking, really old, really... Those old guys are really bitter, you know?
Yelling at the kids on the lawn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Get off my lawn.
The guy who hates the kids, you get him, you put him on the basin of the Mesas.
Break my window.
Okay, exactly. So they don't have mercy on him. Okay, good. Now here's the key line. She'achzaryos ha'elu, she'matenes ha'am achar hevel. So cruelty to these types of people, like a Mesas, who mislead the people after nonsense, like Avodah Zarah, rachamim hi ba'olam. It's rachamim to the world. Shenemar, and there's a quote, a pasuk from Irni Dachas, leman yashav Hashem echaron apo v'nasal nuchar rachamim. Okay, so the God should return from his anger and he gives you mercy. Okay, and I think basically this is the Rambam, which is ultimately going to give the answer. Okay, and the idea is like this: is that yes, you're looking for people who are going to be cruel, right? Who have a certain emotion of cruelty, emishen labanim, right, and zaken and sris, and in terms of the actual emotion, on a superficial level, it looks like cruelty. Okay, and like what Shaul did, which Shmuel did, of cutting Agag up into four pieces on a superficial level, and it really is the emotion in a certain sense that he's going through. Okay, I think it would seem to me is that it's one of achzarius, or it's a gruesome activity of really cutting somebody up and spewing. You know, most people I don't think could do that. Right, you don't have the heart for that kind of thing. Okay, but the idea of when we say rachamim and achzarios, when the Torah advocates a path of rachamim, it's not advocating. It's looking at emotions, not the shallow emotion of cruelty and mercy, but the idea of mercy that the Torah advocates is it's one of there's a purpose to it. Okay, there's a purpose to why you're compassionate to another individual and why you're merciful in general to people. Okay, it's because of what it accomplishes, of it allows for society to go on. If you are always looking to make mida keneged mida, if you were never a person insults you, you're going to always decide, I want mishpat, I'm going to take revenge, and revenge really is really mishpat. You know, mida for mida keneged mida. If he didn't lend me something, I'm not going to lend him something, or he insults me, I'm going to insult him back. Or you know, is if you're, the world ultimately is going to be destroyed. Because people in general make mistakes, right? Every person makes mistakes. People sin. And if you're going to come against every person with strict justice, everybody's going to be chayiv and everybody's going to die. And you can't have a world like that. And in general, you have to have rachamim. Okay? But like the purpose of the rachamim, but the rachamim has a purpose to it. Okay? And that's why the Gemara in Brachos, it's in Lama Gimel Amud Aleph. It says, Kol mi she'ein bo das, it's also the rachamim alav. Right? A person who has no intelligence is also to have rachamim on that person. Because you give a person a second chance. You have compassion on a person. It's because they have intelligence and they're able to correct their ways. And the second chance makes sense for them because they can improve. They can do tshuva. But it's not like if a judge, you have a 16-year-old kid who's a robber, right? So I want to have compassion on the kid. I'm not going to put him... in juvie, I'm not going to do anything to, you know, compassion, he's just a kid, let him off. Okay? And the kid, and if you're not evaluating, is this going to benefit, is the kid going to do it again? So, you're not, what about the next guy he's going to rob? What about, it's like rachamim to this particular kid on a certain level, an emotional level right this moment, but in terms of the deeper emotion of rachamim, which has a certain depth to it, which is, it's purpose driven, it's teleologically driven. It's using your intelligence of what is this rachamim going to produce. It doesn't really help this kid now. Ultimately, you think you're being compassionate to the kid, but it really ruins his life because now he doesn't learn his lesson. He's going to do something worse the next time, and somebody's going to kill him. He's going to lose his life because of that. Okay, and what about the people he's going to rob next time because you didn't really reprimand him? Okay, so sometimes you have to think about what in general is going to, what are going to be the consequences of these actions. And in general, it is good to have compassion and to be merciful to people. And in general, that will produce good consequences. But there are certain situations where, like the Gemara says, if a person has no intelligence whatsoever, then just to give them second chances is not a good thing. It's also to do that kind of thing. Because and you have to really throw the book at them because that's the only that you're being really it's rachem to the rest of the world to let the maces go off and have him convince somebody else.
Yeah.
to worship Avodah Zarah and to ruin their life. That's not really, you're not thinking about the other people. What about the people he's going to convince? And also the fact that people know that there's such a thing as a Mesis, that it, and that people set up Edom for you and you don't need Hasra. The fact that we're so cruel to this Mesis, right, it prevents people from doing it. They're scared to do it to begin with. Right, so you have to think about the purpose of rachamim is you have to, it's an intelligent action. All the morals and the ethics we have, they're teleologically driven. They have a purpose. Okay, they generally accomplish good things, and that's why you do them. So in certain situations, the right response is rachamim, but to certain people, the right response is achzarios, is cruelty. Okay, do you have a question before or no?
Yeah, right. So mercy is not a value in its own right.
I'm saying there's a deeper idea of mercy. There's a deeper idea of rachamim. There's like the shallow emotion. There's like a shallow emotion of which you could say when you cut a guy into four pieces, that's achzarios, and you're sparing the baby, that's rachamim. But I'm saying when you analyze the emotion on a deeper level, and it's not just an emotion. It's like there's a certain. It's hard to explain. There's a certain depth to an emotion. Okay, when you do these perfections, the moral ethical perfections. Of compassion, okay, that when it actually has its maturely developed perfection and ethical trait in a person of rachamim, so he doesn't just say, "Well, I can't cut this guy in four pieces because, you know," and we'll get to why it makes sense to do there. But he analyzes that this is really the most compassionate thing to do to this teenager is to throw the book at him. And that's really the best thing to do for the world and for this kid. And even though it might be hard for you to stomach it in terms of the superficial emotion of achzarios, but a person, that's the ultimate rachamim for the person to really do. And, and if your emotions are just on a superficial level, you're a compassionate person, then you won't be able to do something like that. But if you have a certain depth to the perfection, to the ethical trait of compassion, then that's exactly what you do. And then ultimately you are being, it doesn't feel on the superficial, shallow plane as compassionate when you're putting the kid behind bars, but like that is what the ethical thing to do is. That produces, that really benefits him, it benefits the world, okay? In the Mesis case, it's not going to really benefit him, but you know, you got to think about the world. Well, it doesn't make sense to be cruel to the whole world, you know? And, here, go ahead.
Just bringing two points, first is that in contrast to the Christian
right.
concept of rachamim,
yeah, right.
where there is an intrinsic idea of mercy, we don't have that idea.
Yeah, right. That's, I mean, it's a good
idea.
That's like, if you look, I mean, that is really one of the main divergences. That was like one of the chidushim that they brought, is like absolute mercy, unqualified. You know, your enemy hits you, turn the other cheek. You lend a guy money, don't ask for it back. Do you know? Like, they really say things like this. I mean, I don't think they keep it, but like, pure love, no justice, no hate, nothing. It's absolute love for pure evil, you love everybody, you don't distinguish. And like, that's the Christian ideal. And they think, in a sense, that that's like, it's like a superhuman ideal for them, and they strive for that. But I mean, that's exactly the Torah saying the opposite of that. Of that, right. He's a Malek, and he's, ultimately, these are the people who want to destroy you. They want to destroy the name of God in the world. They'll die al chilul Hashem. That's what their nation believes in. And it's not compassionate to leave them alive. It's not compassionate to have. Well, I'll explain in a second what the, you know, the baby thing is. But that's not compassion. And for example, and ultimately the Torah believes that the only way to really deal with something like a Malik or an Ir Nidachas, where a movement is, you have to totally eradicate it. You have to totally uproot it. And if you leave the movement around, if you leave the children around of a Malik, is, you know, you can't just take, you know, 10,000 babies and just raise them and not tell them where they come from. They're going to know where they came from. You know what I mean? And like, the mafia understands this. You can't leave the kids of the people you kill alive. They're going to come back and get revenge. It's not going to work. Okay, that's certainly in a Malik. It doesn't make sense to start adopting, you know, 10,000 babies. And hopefully they're not going to realize where they came from, and they're going to continue the movement, okay? And that's one thing. And I think the primary thing is not even that. It's just that you have to, certain types of things, certain types of evils, the only way to really get rid of them and their influence on the rest of the people is by totally eradicating everything about them. The entire city, destroy it, burn it, don't rebuild it. The people, the families, everything. He has an offspring. It's like you have to erase the memory of a Malik, you have to erase the memory of the Ir Nidachas. And if you don't do that, then, you know, they're going to, their influence is going to spread. And it's not really compassionate. You're being compassionate to these babies, but like, you know, that baby grow ultimately means that now, because, you know, baby Hitler is born and, you know, you have 6 million Jews who get killed, and like, where's the compassion to those people? And, you know, and I mean, it's one thing, I think it's hard for a person necessarily to see, in a certain sense of, you could think maybe it's not such a big deal if you leave a couple of babies of Amalek alive. But, and I think a person has to defer judgment to God in certain situations here, that God is saying that this is the way to deal with them. And if you can appreciate that, you know, that leaving babies, not totally wiping out Amalek, is could lead to consequences, and God is telling you that it does lead to negative consequences, and you can see what did happen from Amalek and what did happen from that ideology of people who die al chilul Hashem, they die for that, and their purpose is to kill Klal Yisrael, and you have the tragedies he went through, where, you know, you have Haman and Purim, you have the Holocaust, you have Hitler, and you can see why it doesn't, you know, maybe Shaul should have shown a little bit less, you know, compassion to Agag, and had a little bit more compassion for the rest of, you know, the future generations. And I think ultimately that really is coming back to that first question of what was Shaul's sin? What was so bad about his sin? Because Shmuel took care of Agag the next day, you know? But I think what was so bad about Shaul's sin of having compassion on Agag was, you see, like the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek, right? We said follows the mitzvah of appointing a king. We did that last week. But the pasuk was ki yad al kes ka, right? There's a hand on God's throne. A hand on God's throne is the Gemara says means refers to a king, right? Because Shlomo sits on God's throne. It's like King Shmuel. Shlomo is sitting on God's throne. The Melech Yisrael is considered to occupy God's throne. And Melchem al Hashem Amalek midor dor. And the Melech Yisrael, he fights the battles of God against the Amalek. Okay, so what Shaul was doing was he was fighting Melchem al Hashem against the Amalek. And by having compassion on Agag, he totally misrepresented the Midos of Kadosh Baruch Hu. If you're showing compassion to Agag is to keep him alive, so then what was everything you just did to the rest of Amalek? Now what is that? Now that it like reduces the entire war against Amalek to a petty vengeance idea of just, we're taking revenge for what they did to us, we're angry at them, now we have the upper hand, we're going to wipe them out, we're going to kill all the babies, all the women, all their animals, destroy them totally. It reduces everything to a totally shallow emotion of achzarios, basically. By having compassion on Agag, you reduce what you've just done to achzarios, to real achzarios, okay, to real cruelty. As opposed to where it might look like cruelty superficially, but ultimately wiping out Amalek was the ultimate act of rachamim. And that was really the Midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu he's supposed to represent. He's supposed to show that this is really, you have to deal with evil in this way, totally wiping them out, showing cruelty to evil, in order to really bring about ultimately a much better world. And when a nation is like Amalek, that is the only way to deal with them. And by him, he totally misrepresented me as a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and by having a false compassion, a superficial compassion, he reduced the entire war to like a false cruelty and a superficial cruelty.
Who is this Rachman to?
Who is the Rachman to?
Yeah, like who is this? Who is the benefactor of this Rachman?
Of wiping out Amalek?
Yeah.
I think the world as a whole. You know, the 6 million Jews who wouldn't have died if you had taken care of Amalek. You know, of what Amalek stands for and what not wiping them out did. Okay, and I think overall it wasn't just one person, but Amalek is a way, it's a way of looking at the world, it's a philosophy. It's like, just like you, I think, at least in theory, a Jew should die for Kiddush Hashem, and Amalek, he dies for Chil Hashem. Okay, they're willing to attack Klal Yisrael, who they have nothing, we have no war with them. We were going into a totally different country. They came out of the blue. They traveled far distance just to attack us after we came out of Mitzrayim. We're a nation of slaves. It's a feel-good story. What is their problem? Why are they trying to? It's a suicide mission against, and they were willing to sacrifice their lives just to kill Jews, just to kill a nation that God had taken out. They were willing to give up their lives to simply remove the name of God from this world. That is their philosophy, and you're not going to change that. You're not going to convert them by talking to them. Diplomatic missions with the head of Iran, why it's not going to work. You don't understand the way they think. Okay, the Torah, God realizes how they think, and he commanded us about them, and you have to appreciate the deep evil that really resides in their souls, and the influence that philosophy and ideology has on the world. And by having compassion on that ideology, and by not totally wiping them out, and really distorting the way the war of what it really stood for, That, I think, had a real tremendous impact on the world. And it kept the whole philosophy of Malik alive in the world. And it came back on us. It came back on us on Purim, and it came back on us on the Holocaust, and it comes back ultimately every generation. Okay, so yeah, that's really, the real Rachmanus would have been to kill Agag. That would have been real Rachamim, a much deeper, sophisticated ethical idea of Rachamim. Okay, not just, and it's an emotion to a certain degree, but it's an emotion combined with intelligence. It's an emotion that's directed at a purpose. So on a certain level, yeah, it's anger, it's vengeance, it's achzarios, but it's on a much deeper plane. It's really directed towards a greater good and towards, you know, the benefit of mankind, of Kiddush Hashem. And that's the real ethics that the Torah advocates. And I think Shmuel tried his best to correct that by showing real achzarios to Agag, by cutting him up and really showing real, going over, try to counteract what Shaul did. But ultimately, you know, the damage was done by what Shaul did. The damage was done. But I mean, Shmuel tried. I think that's why he went to such an extent, to really show achzarios. Because you really have to, when you have a nation like Amalek, when you have real evil, you have to show achzarios. Okay, and to show rachamim, it's misplaced. It's misplaced. It's really harmful. You're not really taking into account consequences. So, you know, that's the basic message of here, is the ethics have to be, they can't just be a shallow emotion, but they have to be directed towards a goal and a purpose. And you have to, it's not as easy as Christianity. You can't just take one emotion and say, you know, cruelty is bad, hate is bad, vengeance is bad, and love and compassion and mercy, those are always good. I'm always going to practice one, I'm never going to practice the other, and indiscriminately apply those two things. You have to really be able to, you have to be able to wield both of those emotions and apply them with your intelligence, with your mind, and when it's appropriate. And you study the Torah to find out when it's appropriate. And that's really, use your mind, use your rationality, and you study the Torah, and how, when to apply each emotion. Go ahead.
Do we understand, though, why he specifically had Rachmanis, even though it was decided on the king specifically?
I don't know. It seems crazy.
Women and children.
I know. It seems totally crazy. I don't know. I think Rebbe once had up shots because the kings used to have, like, there's like an identification between kings. You know?
And that?
Because it's like, because the Achzarius, because that root of that is Achzar, but a stranger.
Oh, right, right.
So Achzarius means that you're breaking your identification with the
person. Right, right. And he identified with the king.
So I would show that he identification with
him. Correct.
He's identifying with Rishus, so that's a real...
That's a real bad trait. But the only thing is, what bothers me about that pshat is it says, V'yachmol shol v'ha'am. It seems like the entire nation identified with Agag and had mercy on Agag. I don't know, the Rishonim there say maybe he was good looking, you know, it's like very bad pshatim. It's not really, it's not clear. I don't know. To me, what I would say is that he was a master manipulator. He was very good, he manipulated them. And that was his, you know, he was a king, he was a powerful king, and he knew how to do it, and somehow he manipulated them into having compassion on him, and they fell for it.
I can't imagine that emotion would take over him, like that wouldn't, like, you know, he wouldn't have that. When he was killing women and children, it's just interesting.
I know. Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wait a minute. Does the Pasuk, does it say that the Bnei Israel had, and Shaul had compassion on Agag and the animals in the same phrase?
I think so. I think it does.
So then maybe it was just Shaul who had compassion on Agag, but then the rest of Bnei Israel was on the animals.
That's not bad. You might be able to say that.
What did you say? The what?
If it says in the same phrase that Bnei Israel and Shaul had compassion on Agag and the animals, then you could say it was Bnei Israel was just on the animals and that Shaul was on Agag.
Yeah, that's good. You could say it says V'yachmo Shaul v'ha'am al Agag v'almitav hatzon v'abakar. So you could say Shaul is for the king and the Am is for the animals.
You could say both for
Yeah, it's not the simplest reading, but it's not bad. It's not bad. That's what I'm saying. That's the thing. That's what's so distorted about it. Is now you're having compassion on the animal. You just killed all the babies and you're having compassion on the animals. It's like, it just totally misrepresents everything. It looks like the whole thing was a selfish war to take revenge. Now you're taking you're plundering. That's why you can't plunder the city. All the possessions of the city has to be totally burnt. Every single thing. Okay, you can't. You cannot take any possessions. By taking possessions from the city, you totally reduce everything you've done to like this petty, selfish thing of like plundering the city. Okay, that's why you're nidachas. By a malik, you cannot take it. It's, and if you see by by Megillah, Ubabizal Loshachos Yadam. It's like you can't, when you're destroying a Amalek, you cannot take the possessions, because our war against Amalek, it's not this petty, superficial, shallow, revenge-driven thing, and we're not looking for money. That's not what it's about, and you can't reduce it to that. It's a tremendous Chil Hashem to reduce the whole war against Amalek to this superficial thing, which is what the nations of the world love to look at it as, and I'm sure they did when they did this. When they made this sin, all the nations of the world said, look what kind of people you Jews are. Look how petty you are. You're driven by revenge. You're just looking for money, da-da-da. That's exactly what they all said. It was a big Chil Hashem. It totally destroyed it, everything that the war had been about.
There you go. So I was going to ask if there's a thing by Mohammed Hashem that you're not allowed to take spells of war.
By Malik specifically, and Irani Dachas. No, it's not in general. It's not always the case. Okay. In general, you could. Okay. In general, you could. But it's by Malik and Irani Dachas.
I'm saying with Yehoshua and sure they did.
Yeah, no, they did. There's a law thing. You split it. The king takes 50%. Everybody else takes 50%. There's there's a rules. No, you generally could. I'm saying in these wars, right. There's a special wars, and they're really... It's cruel. It is cruel, but the whole point is you have to look at this cruelty in a larger frame.
Right. I also heard that you're not allowed to leave the animals alive simply because someone's going to see the animal and be like, oh, that was an animal left over from there, whatever, and it's going to cause a Chil Hashem just by remembering the fact that they existed.
You could say that. You could say these things. They're all, look, there's a lot of reasons that's going to be part of it, but ultimately the tzivoy came down to destroy them all, and there was a purpose to that tzivoy, to the mitzvah. Okay, and you have to follow that mitzvah, and it makes sense, and there was a good in it, and it was really the appropriate means of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and by you having more compassion than God, you have is a whole distorted idea of ethics. Totally wrong idea of ethics. And he misrepresented the Mios HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was Chil Hashem, and that was his onus. Okay.